No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breasts, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's One Last Thing with co-host Brad McGowan. Brad, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. We're recording this the Saturday night before the Monday night showdown with Detroit, and we all learned this week that Matt Abike is out, which I'm a bit concerned about that. He's been terrific this year, so hoping for the best, but otherwise doing great.
Somber time for sure for Ravens fans with a big set of injuries. The couple groin injuries who are back fully practicing at the end of the week, but who knows if they're still having an effect, but they're not on the injury report anymore. Matt Abike's injury has a menacing tone to it in terms of, Harbaugh's words about it, which certainly scare me. But now we have to go and get to an even darker topic. Maybe not darker than Matt Abike being seriously hurt, but a very dark topic, which is the Ravens' blown leads over the last three seasons. And you and I look back and we picked out 10 games from this era where the Ravens had a very substantial chance to win and let it slip away.
We've after week one, I think many of us were left reeling that the Ravens weren't able to close out that Bills game. And it got me thinking a lot about what is it about this team that seems to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory so often. And so my thought was to take the games where they had the 90% win probability. We identified a couple others in addition to those eight since the 22 season, where Baltimore had they had a clear chance to win, then they could have put the game away and they made a mistake down the stretch. And what I thought was interesting and what I wanted to do is figure out, did they somehow go into a shell once they had a big lead when they were trying to milk it? Were they calling plays very conservatively, or was there something consistent that seemed to happen that we could just identify? It's one thing to see a stat that they've blown this many games when they have a 90% win probability, but what actually happened in those games, and are there themes that we could pull out?
Yeah, I think that's the way to approach something like this too. First of all, start with an open mind. Don't say, is it all Harbaugh, or was it all on the offensive coordinator, or did Greg Roman screw us? Or, don't try and start with the initiation of blame. Look at these games individually. They all are very different. That's one thing you'll notice about this. They have some common threads. Lamar played in all of them. You know, that was one of the common threads of these games that were lost. They had another common thread that they didn't put up a lot of offense in the fourth quarter. Of course, you would expect that when you're looking only at losses. And of course, you know, Harbaugh was involved in a couple of these losses without question. And then you also have to ask yourself, well, of course, the coach is going to be involved in some losses. The quarterback is going to be involved in some losses. What other consistent themes were there? Another thing to do, well, the defense is certainly to blame in a lot of this, was to say that the defense was left out there on the field a lot by the offense. That was certainly the case in this. And they give up a bunch of hellaciously long, easy moving drives in these games that are frustrating as hell. So anyway, without further ado, let's get into some of these games. I'm going to narrate our way through these one game at a time. And Brad, then after I do this, and I'll hopefully be brief on each one and describing the situation, and everybody's going to go, oh yeah, crap, I remember that game. We don't want to spend too much time on that. We want to spend a little bit of time talking about what Vila, and then at the end, we're going to come back and we're going to look at what common threads really were showing up over and over in these games. So we only went back to 2022, and the first loss is going to be very familiar to everyone. It's that the loss of the 35-14 lead against Miami in week two in 2022. It was at home in Baltimore. It made it all that much the worst, but they led 35-14 prior to Miami's touchdown drive where they scored with 12-12 to play to cut it from 35-14 to 35-21. In the fourth quarter, the Ravens had drives of 5, 3, 6, and 4 plays. So the defense obviously was not getting a lot of rest during this time. They had a huge 4th-and-1 at the Miami 40. Brad, I'll let you address that one if you want to. They gave up 2 long touchdown passes to Tyreek Hill. The second one was beating Hamilton, who was not in position for a 60-yard play down the left sideline, where he and Marcus Williams, you know, and I think we've heard since that Hamilton was the guy who was not positioned properly. Hamilton was up near the line of scrimmage looking to blitz, I guess, and Marcus Williams noticed it. He tried to bail out and get back as quickly as he could, and then you can see from the post-play emoting that it was almost certainly Hamilton that was in the wrong place. The Ravens did have another chance in that game. The Dolphins tied it up with 3 touchdowns. Tucker kicked a field goal with 2:23 to put them back up 38-35. A lot of people have probably blocked that one out of their memory. And then Miami drove 68 yards again in 5 plays for the winning touchdown. So an absolutely miserable fourth quarter where the Ravens are outscored 28-3.
Yeah, this game, I can still remember throwing my phone and breaking it at the end of this game. It was so confounding. But going back to your intro and talking about reviewing these with an open mind, actually, when I was going into this, one of the things I was wondering is, did we just really get conservative on offense down the stretch trying to close these games out? Were we just running on first and second down every time, getting stuffed and then unable to convert? And this being the first game that we looked at, when the Dolphins score at the beginning of the fourth and the Ravens to cut the lead to 14, the Ravens get the ball back and they continue being aggressive. The first play of that drive is a 26-yard pass to Duvernay.
Yep.
They continue throwing the ball and they wind up on the Dolphins 40-yard line with that 4th-and-1 play. And I think they ran QB power, which was their bread and butter, and they just got stuffed. And that was pretty unfortunate. And so, you know, in that game, they weren't getting conservative dramatically on offense, trying to milk the clock. And then we talked, you mentioned on defense about Hamilton. This was Hamilton's second game. This was McDonald's second game. We were playing Pepe Williams in the slot and corner, the 4th-round rookie that was drafted that year. And unfortunately, the coverages just broke down over and over and over again in the fourth, and they couldn't get a stop. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
It's almost hard to say the defense got tired in this fourth quarter. They certainly got outscored 28-3, but the drives were so fast.
Right.
You know, it's really hard to point to the defense as they were tired, but the offense didn't give them much rest. And the defense had some players in the secondary in particular didn't know what they were doing. And at this point, and it's kind of a funny turn of events, Marcus Williams was the guy who really had it held together. he was, playing some great football at that point for the Ravens. And would the next year as well, when he was healthy. It wasn't a great tackler in 23, but 24 is really when Marcus Williams fell apart. 22, Marcus Williams on a per snap basis was outstanding. And unfortunately, he could not hold it together for the Ravens secondary in this game.
Yeah, I believe in the first half of this game, he actually has an interception on one of the Dolphins' first drives on a sort of a spectacular diving off a tip, catching the ball. This was, I also think, wasn't this his first season? We signed him and then subsequently drafted Hamilton. And so, yeah, he was looking terrific early in that
season. He actually had two interceptions in this game and led the team with 10 tackles. So there was a time where people too young to remember, and I don't think there's too many of you out there, that Marcus Williams was the best defensive player the Ravens had for a short period of time there.
Yeah.
Or you could make that argument anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing I would just say to wrap this up, it just seems, they just made a bunch of mistakes in the secondary. They got unlucky, and they stayed aggressive on offense. They just, the momentum flipped, and they just couldn't really get it back. It just slipped away from them. Like, whether you want to blame coaching, everyone's involved takes the blame in a loss like this. But
I think the coaching, the coach who was blamed this time was very much McDonald.
Yeah.
It wasn't Harbaugh that was blamed. It was McDonald. McDonald was a young coordinator. He didn't have the secondary in order, blah, 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 blah. Well, okay. That it's probably true. And there are some horrific blow-ups by the players themselves on the field in terms of that. And McDonald was quickly forgiven by the end of this year and then into the next year when he was outstanding and the Ravens had a triple crown defense. And Orr went through a similar period, obviously, last year and then into this year where last year and then into the end of last year where there's a completely different view. We're still formulating our opinion this year.
Yeah. I guess the one thing that I would say about this game that is sort of reminiscent of the Buffalo game in the first week one of this year is the Ravens had, I think they had a 79-yard touchdown run by Lamar at the end of the third quarter. They also had a 75-yard touchdown pass to Bateman, where they were scoring very quickly and then putting the defense back out on the field. It was early in the season. I mean, who knows if the defense is getting tired in the fourth. I didn't look at the play charts or time of possession, but.
Yeah, the Ravens got out-snapped 69-54 in this game. It's been worse the last two games, but they definitely were the Ravens are better when they're a drive-sustaining team. I think most teams are. It's always better to score on 15 plays than it is to score on 3 if you can just bludgeon your opponent doing it on 15 plays. And it's just you can't necessarily control it to that degree. And in this game, they scored too quick, I think, is our end result on what happened. But it's certainly not the reason they lost. Let me move ahead because we got to move a little quicker.
Yeah.
2022, week 4 against the Bills, they led 20-3 after Tucker's field goal late in the second quarter. They allowed the Bills to score then 20 unanswered points. The Ravens just had 4 drives after halftime, 3, 5, 7, and 14 plays. The 14 plays was after they were behind again. Punt, punt, interception, interception. And it's a little bit more than that. They had a failed 4th-and-2 that was intercepted, Q4, 4:15. And they were in Buffalo territory at the time, and I think they were leading by... might have been leading by 7 at the time. I don't have the game up in front of me. Damn it! All right. If you want to pull it up while I'm doing it, then the Bills got the ball back at the 20. They drove 77 yards. After the failed 4th-and-2 was intercepted in the end zone, the Bills drove 77 yards for the winning field goal as time expired. So they went for it on 4th-and-2 with the game tied at the 20-yard line, at the 2-yard line. I believe it was the correct decision to do that, but they could have kicked a field goal to go ahead at that point. And that, I think, he will take some crap for this, but I think that was absolutely the right call by Harbaugh to try and go for the touchdown there. Unfortunately, he was also intercepted at midfield. By both these interceptions were by Jordan Poyer, and that set the Bills up on 2 of their fourth quarter drives.
This game was one of those games where they got out quickly and then just it seemed like they used all their good plays in the first quarter, and then the offense could not get anything going. Going into the 22 season, they were relying on Bateman to step up and really, you know, be the number one guy. And this is the game that he first gets hurt and injures his foot that he's going to try to play through for the next few weeks. And then it's going to go on the shelf and have surgery. And it takes him 2 full years to recover from this. So, I mean, this game, I don't have a whole lot to say about this game other than they just could not make anything happen on offense after getting that lead. And, you know, this is one of, there's a couple of these games upcoming where they turn the ball over one or two times trying to protect a lead. And those are just backbreakers. You can't have that.
Right. All right. Well, you know, allowing a big long field goal drive, it can't be wholly unexpected. It's very, very difficult to defend four down football. But with the game tied, the Bills had to play three down football in their end of the field. And so they tried and they lost that wager effectively. But I do think it was the right decision to go for it on fourth and two for the touchdown. From a pure mathematical perspective, I don't think there's any doubt about it. There's 4:15 left in the game when they did it. Going up by three wouldn't have been much of a lead at all. It certainly would have been plenty of time for Buffalo to score from about the 30. But they drove down and they used the entire clock. They spent 12 plays, 77 yards, and they ended up kneeling out the ball at the Baltimore 1-2 on their last two offensive or plays from scrimmage before they kicked the game-winning field goal. So Buffalo, unlike some of the other teams that we're going to see in this list, really used the clock exceptionally well in both games. But you can see in these, among these three games, this is true in both games because this drives me nuts when this happens. It basically is true. So the Bills had the ball last in the first half and the second half of both the games we're going to talk about, which of course includes the week one game. And they scored on all four of those drives. And it was a touchdown to end the first half here to cut the lead to 20-10. And there was a kickoff and then a kneel, but that's not, you know, that's basically not giving them a chance with 9 seconds left to play. And in the second half, they kicked the game-winning field goal, and then the Buffalo game this year, they kicked the field goal, and then they kicked the field goal to win the game at the end of the half, at the end of the second half. So, unbelievable clock management by the opponent probably needs to be something in terms of a thread we need to talk about.
Yeah, for whatever reason, when Buffalo plays Baltimore, they, you know, anecdotally, as I'm thinking through it, it seems that they win that situational battle that you're describing. How are you getting an extra possession by potentially getting the last possession of each half? How are you, you know, if you're getting the ball at the beginning of the second half and you can get that score at the end of the half, you know, going into the halftime, it just flips the possession game slightly. And it does seem that they come out on top when they play us. Although then again, you know, again, like I'm just thinking about this, and this is why it's important to go back and actually look at these games, because you probably don't think about that as it relates to last year's week four game against Buffalo when Baltimore dominates. You know, the losses stick in our heads way more than the wins.
It's true. It is something that you probably need to look at when you've got a real history of it in terms of being more aggressive on fourth down, say, or being more aggressive on early downs. But I think there is a big swing and a miss coming up from a coaching perspective the 25 week one game. But the 22 week one game, I wouldn't put on the coach. I think this was just Buffalo executing their 2-minute and 4-minute offense exactly as they wanted to, and the Ravens just didn't have an answer for it.
Right.
And so a lot of it was being tired in this game with their very short drives in the second half.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, let's go ahead and move forward to 2022 week 6 at the Meadowlands. And this was a stinker if ever there was one, I can tell you that. They led 20-10 after Andrews touchdown, Q4, 12:54 to go. And then a bunch of things started to go wrong. They had an interception, a fumble on their last two drives. They got the ball back, still up 20-17 with 6 minutes left. So Daniel Jones drove the Giants for a touchdown to get him within three. Then they had a third and two opportunity, but an illegal formation negated a Jackson run for conversion with Q4, 3:01. Which is kind of the moment of truth in this football game. Excuse me. And Jackson then fumbled, picked it up, and threw an interception to Love, who returned it to the Baltimore 13-yard line in just an unbelievable sequence. The Giants went ahead on a Barkley touchdown with 1:46 to play, and then they closed it out when Thibodeau had a sack fumble minus eight of Jackson that was recovered by Williams. So anyway, I can tell you that was a miserable afternoon at the Meadowlands for us.
This game is an example of one where when you see the stat floated on Twitter after week one that the Ravens have blown X number of games when they had a 90% win probability, in your mind, you see that and you think, oh my gosh, Baltimore was dominating all these games. How'd they blow it? This game never felt like the Ravens were in control. This game was just a mess from the beginning. And it's important to remember, this was the Wink Martindale was the defensive coordinator for New York, and this was his first season after leaving Baltimore. And so I imagine he had some experience defending Lamar Jackson in practice and had his team really ready to go. And Baltimore just kind of looked kind of miserable much of the game on offense.
All right, I'm going to take the other side of that argument and say, okay, the Ravens averaged 8.8 yards per rush, ran up 211 yards. They ran all over the Giants. They passed the ball a little bit less effectively, 5.7 yards per pass, but they moved it for 7.0 on offense. Obviously, that's a greatest show on turf kind of number in terms of you win a game. They held the Giants to 3.8 yards per play, but they basically coughed up the ball game on these last two drives where they had the interception and the fumble. The interception was the big one because that was a drive where they had hoped to control the ball and run the clock, and it went just the other way. It was just like the Henry fumble against Buffalo this year, in that they gave the ball up and also put the other team in scoring position to win the game immediately. So that game was 40-32, so it was technically to tie the game, but it was similar in terms of the wrong way. But the Ravens beat the Giants all over the field in this game and still managed to lose it. A very bad loss. And obviously, you know, it came down to the fact that it came down to one horrible play is bad, but there was really two moments of truth. There's the illegal formation penalty, and I don't even know who that was on. I'd have to go back and check who was actually not lined up, who was uncovered, or who was the player who should have been covering up there. And then the Jackson fumbling, picking it up, then throwing the interception. Both terrible moments in this game.
I'm getting depressed thinking about this game, but and this game remained until last season when Baltimore lost to Philadelphia in the regular season. This was the only game Lamar had lost against an NFC opponent through his seventh season. So, or sixth or seventh season. So there are mistakes and then there are mistakes. And it does seem one of the themes is that there are just backbreaking mistakes that someone on the team makes trying to close these games out. And that Lamar fumble and interception was a doozy.
Well, the illegal formation also, because if they had got that first down, I think they put the game away. But it was with 3:09 to play. Certain plays just they break your back. It was like a third and inches that went back to third and five, I think, too. It was third and two and they converted. All right, let's move on. Just got to go a little quicker here. 2022, week 12 against the Jaguars. They led 19-10 after Edwards' touchdown. That was a Q4 13:07. And then a bunch of stuff started to go wrong. Their last three drives were fumble on one play, a touchdown, and then a missed field goal. So they did have a second chance they gave themselves, and then a third. But they could not convert those. The Jaguars immediately after the Edwards touchdown drove 75 yards on 14 plays to close it to 19-17. Then Gus Edwards got his chance again and fumbled the very first play from scrimmage. It was recovered by Campbell, and this is T. Campbell, not Calais Campbell, who was on the Ravens at the time. And the Ravens held them with a three and out. So the Jags just kicked a field goal to go up 20-19 at that point. And then there's a well-known play here. The Ravens drove 75 yards on six plays. They had a 62-yard pass to DeSean Jackson was one of the longest Lamar has ever thrown in the air. And a beautiful play, basically moving towards the left sideline. But the problem was this play was 75 yards on six plays, and it used just 2:17 of the clock.
Mm-hmm.
So the Ravens scored. They made their 2-point conversion. No, they didn't. They took a 1-point conversion because they wanted to go up 8 at the time. Sorry, they wanted to go up. I have this wrong. Yeah, they were down. They were up.
Yeah, I should it was.
Yeah, they did. They scored. Okay. They scored a 2-point conversion down 20-19. They went up 27-20. All right. And then the Jaguars turn right around on him, drive 75 yards on 10 plays. Matt Jones scores the potential tying TD. Then the Jaguars decide to go for two, succeed, throwing a pass to Zay Jones to go up 28-27. The Ravens get the ball back with just a few seconds left. Might have been about 15, 20 seconds left. They got to midfield, attempted a 67-yard field goal as time expired, but it was short. Who would have figured?
Right.
And the Ravens lose that game. Miserable, miserable game.
This is a miserable game. I remember feeling during this game that the season was slipping away a little bit. Baltimore's injuries in the receiver room were starting to pile up, which is why DeSean Jackson is in this game. You know, the Edwards fumble again, he's such a consistent, you know, a consistent player, but here's the theme of you get the ball, you're protecting a lead, and someone turns it over immediately. And someone that you probably wouldn't expect. And it's just, again, it's remarkable how this happens. The other interesting point here is when the Ravens do score to take the lead back and go up 27-20, Jacksonville gets the ball back. During that drive, Trevor Lawrence is sacked by Calais Campbell on a second down play, making it 3rd and 21, and the Jags managed to convert.
Yep.
There are a couple other situations that we'll get to where things like that happen, where someone on defense seemingly makes a big play, gets a big sack, forces a 3rd and forever, and the defense can't close it out. So they might get one singular play from someone, but it's all for naught.
Yep. No, there's a lot of that in here, and it's really going in both directions. Jackson took a large number of high value sacks on these plays as well, to help lose some of these. All right, we'll move on to the next one, which was 2023 in Week 3 versus the Colts. They led 19-16 after they got a safety of Gardner Minshew with 2:03 left in the fourth quarter. Now, for the anti-Harbaugh crowd, this is definitely one of the ones where Harbaugh was a major goat in the loss. So there's 2:03 to play, and of course the Colts have to use a free kick to kick the ball off from their own 20-yard line. The Ravens were up to try and defend against the onside kick with only Zay Flowers back. Now, Harbaugh had timeouts. He had all three timeouts at this point and could have called a timeout with 2:03 left to go to make sure Zay Flowers knew what to do in the play. But he just he basically signaled to him. He thought the message had been received, and then Flowers fair caught the free kick. One of the stupidest plays I've ever seen. The clock didn't move down from 2:03 because it doesn't move until the offensive player touches the ball, and our fair catch, it doesn't move at all. So they had to run a play with 2:03 to go. They ran for a yard, then they ran for no gain, and then they ran for 2 yards on 3rd and 9 and were forced to punt the ball away with 1:48 to go. But what was worse about it, that was on the play, on the 3rd and 9 play, there was an illegal block above the waist. So even if it had worked out, it was a Zay Flowers jet sweep again. Even if it had worked out, there was an IBW on the play that was going to call it back. Plus, the clock is stopped again for no good reason. So basically, they could have had the ball at 2 minutes. Indianapolis had one timeout left to call, and they would have basically given them the ball back with about 15 seconds to play. They would have had two full 45-second runoffs with no timeout, one more where it's just a play, maybe you figure about 5 to 10 seconds, and then they would have punted, and there would have been the time on that play. I think you're down to about 15 seconds left to go. Indianapolis could have had the ball. and needing to drive for a game-tying field goal. Instead, they gave it to him with 141 with these two sets of screw-ups. Indianapolis drove not really impressively. They were 28 yards on six plays. Out. By the way, there's a big shanked punt by Jordan Stout, which went a big whopping 34 yards. And they kicked a 53-yard field goal with a minute and 2 seconds still left on the clock. I'll let you jump in here if you want, but there's a little more to talk about still.
This game is the game where, to your point, I think there is the bigger blunders. Let me stop you for a second.
Because if we're going to talk about, you know, in general, like, what's our thoughts on the game? Let's just finish the description of what actually happened quickly here.
Okay. So
the Ravens attempted a 61-yard field goal at the end of regulation. They got the ball back with 57 seconds. They did get two first downs on the drive. They got the ball to the Indianapolis 43, and then they tried on fourth and two, a 61-yard field goal. It was no good, again, short from that distance by Tucker. So Tucker's misses generally came from long range, although this 23 was kind of a down year for him. And he missed this one. And then what made it worse is we go three possessions into overtime. The Ravens twice go three and out on their possessions, but Indianapolis finally on their third overtime drive with 1:14 to play kicks yet another 53-yard field goal to win the game.
And this field goal happens after Baltimore is driving in overtime. They get the ball into Indianapolis territory on third and three. Lamar throws it to Likely, who is past the first down, and he just drops the ball. And this I remember this vividly. Baltimore chooses to go for it on fourth and three from the Indianapolis.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
47 and it's incomplete, and that turns the ball back over to Indianapolis, and they're able to drive down and win it. This game, I mean, you know, I made the point, I started making the point before, like, this is the game where there was the one singular coaching decision where you would love to have it back. You would love to see Harbaugh actually call the timeout, bring Zay over. Zay is a rookie this season. The game is in the rain. The free kick happens at 2:03, to your point, right before the 2-minute warning. It is imperative to get to the 2-minute warning after you on this play. And yeah. We don't really know what was said. I think Harbaugh after this was saying in the presser that he was trying to tell them not to fair catch it, and maybe he just misinterprets it. But you know, you would like to see him call the timeout here. They had the timeouts to burn. They could have used it and gotten the right play in this situation. But this blunder is squarely on that play.
Yeah, I agree. That really lost them the ball game here too. It was a matter of I mean, the Aguilar IBW wouldn't have happened because I think they would have just knelt and punted to let the ball get away. Or if they hadn't, they would have been much more conservative with the run and just tried to get it on three downs. I'd forgotten about the fourth and three attempt with 3:25 to go in overtime, but there it is. And I don't have any problem with that, by the way, going to the 47-yard line and trying for the win instead of the tie. One of the things about being in that situation is if you tie that ball game, any value you have from tiebreakers is lost. So if you have a good record in your division or a good record in your conference, or you've beaten other teams that you need to beat, and the Ravens had already lost to Buffalo that season, you really don't want to. No, they hadn't. Not in 23, they hadn't. They lost in 22 to Buffalo, right? So they hadn't lost to Buffalo in 23.
Right.
But you lose the opportunity to take advantage of your tiebreaker situation. So that was unfortunate. And the Ravens, they went for it on 4th and 3. I agree with the decision anyway, going for 4th and 3 at the 47. It's got well over a 50% chance to work. If it works, you probably drive for the winning score. And if it doesn't work, you know, it's bad, but it's not, you still had a chance to stop them. And in fact, they did. It's just that Gay kicked yet another 53-yard field goal, which was quite unfortunate.
Yeah, this game was a messy game. This was the one where Hamilton had 3 sacks in the first half and was looking, like all world.
All right,
you want to jump on to the
2023 Week 5 against the Steelers. They led 10-3 as they lined up to punt from their own 14-yard line, and that was a Q4 11-18. A bunch of things went wrong from that point forward. And the Steelers played a lot of small ball to finish up this game. They had a blocked punt by Killebrew for a safety on that play. Okay, that made it 10-5. If you didn't ever remember that score specifically from Ravens history. then Pickett and the Steelers drove for a field goal on the ensuing drive to make it 10-8. So the Steelers are the only team in NFL history who's ever won a game 11-10, by the way. They did against the Chargers a number of years ago. It's obviously in the 2-point era, but they're the only one ever to have that final score. But after the 10-8, the Ravens went 3 and out. They punted, but the punt was fumbled by Moon and recovered by Seymour, who returned it all the way to the 5-yard line. So now this is really their high point of the game here. I wanted to talk about the other small ball stuff, but they're at the 5-yard line, up 10-8. You know, and there was, I'm not sure how much time left, but wasn't much. And on 3rd and goal from the 5-yard line, Jackson was intercepted in the end zone by Joey Porter. So,
yeah.
Pick it then. Let me finish the narration and then you talk about it whatever you want if that's all right. So Pickett drove the Steelers to the Baltimore 41. Then he threw a touchdown pass to Pickens. Now Pickens got behind Humphrey on the right sideline. He caught the ball, and if you're a Steelers fan, you'd have been saying, kneel down, Pickens. But when is Tip Pickens ever going to pass up a touchdown of his own? And he went right into the end zone. And the Steelers went up 14-10 after a failed 2-point conversion, but they actually opened the door for the Ravens in this game again, which was weird and very stupid and very, very Pickett, a very Pickens, I should say. Pickett actually threw the pass, but very, very Pickens. Then the Ravens took over. Lamar was sack fumbled for -9 by Highsmith. The Steelers did something I've never seen before. They kneeled 3 times and then they kicked a field goal to go up 17-10 with 52 seconds left. So let's review here. They couldn't ask Pickens to kneel down, basically force all the Baltimore timeouts and go up by 1 point to win the game 11-10. So instead, he goes in the end zone, scores a touchdown. But afterwards, Tomlin totally takes the ball out of the hands of his offense, kneels 3 times, and gets a field goal to extend their lead with Q4 52 seconds remaining. Now, that's a lot of time left on the clock to kick a field goal from 42 yards, which is not nothing. And then they took a -1, a -1, and a -4 on that drive and ran it down to 52 seconds. It's an interesting situation there because the Ravens are out of timeouts. So it would have run down to about 10 seconds and they would have kicked the field goal. But Okorafor had an illegal formation penalty called on him, and that stopped the clock in that situation. So the Steelers did everything they could to keep the Ravens in this game. The Ravens took over the second play. Wrong game. Lamar was sacked by Watt on 4th and 7 to seal the game. So they got a big sack fumble by Highsmith earlier, then a sack by Watt to seal the game. That was with only 20 seconds left. And then Pickett finally had his final kneel of the half. Very rare you get four kneels in one half of football, but he managed to do it in this particular case.
Yeah, this was another. There are some just ugly games in this that we're reviewing. This is another one. Baltimore was up 10 to nothing with the ball in the second quarter, driving towards the end of the second quarter. And Lamar completes a pass to Justice Hill. Hill fumbles, and it's recovered by Pittsburgh on their own 48 or 49 yard line. And that leads to their drive before the half, where they go down and kick a field goal. And so that's how the score gets to 10-3 going into the half. Baltimore was dominating all the way up until that point. And then, you know, when you look at the end of the game, they turn the ball over three times. Once when they got the ball in their opponent's 5-yard line, that was Lamar just tried to throw it up to Odell Beckham, and Joey Porter makes his first interception on the ball. It was just a really ugly kind of play where it looked like Lamar was just trying to give Beckham a chance. But this is just, like an ugly, ugly game. One of the things here,
a recurring theme. That's the one recurring theme in all of these, is they're unbelievably ugly.
Yeah. And we're also, we gotta get running. We gotta get going. Let's jump to the next one.
Okay. So the next one is week 10 against the Browns, still in 2023. They led 31-17 after Edwards TD at 11:34 of the fourth quarter. Gus Edwards seems to be, scoring some TDs to seemingly put games away a couple of times here, but then they allowed 16 unanswered points to the Browns. The last two drives they had were interception and punt, but the Browns drove 56 yards on 6 plays. And this was with Deshaun Watson at quarterback, by the way. That drive, they never got him to third down. I mean, that's just the defense not being able to stand up to the Deshaun Watson-led offense of the Browns. And then the Ravens received the kickoff at 8:57. The second play, Lamar threw an interception to Newsom that was returned for a touchdown, and that was a ball that was tipped by Okoronkwo at the line of scrimmage. So, obviously a bad situation and a kind of a fluky play, but once again, turnovers are really, really hitting the Ravens up in a bad way at this point. The Browns missed the extra point to keep the game at 31-30. A lot of people maybe don't remember that. The Ravens got one first down, then they punted the ball in the end zone. Owe had a sack minus 8 with a forced fumble. But the Browns recovered the fumble. Wyatt Teller recovered the fumble. And then Cleveland converted 2nd and 19 on 2 plays. They ran the ball the last 5 times, covering 33 yards, and that included a kneel. And then they kicked the game-winning field goal as time expired from 40 yards.
This was the single probably best Deshaun Watson game that he played in Cleveland since he's signing that contract. In the second half, I just remember watching this game just being like, flabbergasted that the Ravens could not stop him. I think a couple bad things here, just really quickly. When Baltimore scores to go up 31-17, they just give up a touchdown drive on the ensuing possession, which that's really frustrating because you would like to see your defense get a stop there. And then they stay aggressive when they get the ball back. But again, Lamar has a pass tipped and it's returned for an interception. It's so frustrating.
Yep. Obviously, this is, and I really wanted to make this short content because we know that you don't want to listen to an hour of frustrating losses and what it was, but we do need to go through common threads. So we're going to go quickly through these last two games. Week 2, 2024 against the Raiders, they led 23-13 after Henry's touchdown. Q4, 12-11. Seems to be 10-point lead right around the 11-12 minute mark of the fourth quarter is a common theme in a lot of these. What went wrong? Well, the last 3 Ravens drives were punt, punt, end of game. That's never good. Well, it can be good if you have a big lead, but that what they weren't able to keep that big lead. The Raiders and Minshew drove 64 yards for a field goal after they got stopped at the 6-yard line. That made that cut the lead to 23-16. Then they had 2nd and 20 after Owe's sack, again another of several during this time where they had a 2nd and long situation, but they couldn't convert it defensively. Adams caught consecutive passes of 26 and 30 yards on the next 2 plays after the Owe sack. Then they had a 3rd and inches opportunity, but Henry had a false start to turn it into 3rd and 5. And then Jackson threw an incomplete that forced a punt with still 7:44 to go at this point. And the Raiders down 7. The Raiders began at their 30. They drove 70 yards on 9 plays for the tying touchdown. They just went for one to make it 23-23, which is probably doing us a favor not go for two there. Ravens get the ball back. They go three and out. They have a S-9 to Crosby on first down, one of a number of sacks that Lamar's taken at key points in this game. And when they're trying to, you know, get a first down, or they needed to move the ball to get a score at this point with the game tied. Then they had to kick at that point. They had to punt, and Stout shanked a 24-yard punt. So we've seen Stout show up a couple times in this to set the Raiders up at the Baltimore 40. Carlson kicked the game-winning field goal with 31 seconds to go. It was just a modest 23-yard drive, and the Ravens were unable to advance the ball past midfield or even to midfield where they might have taken a chance with Tucker. They did have a lateral play on the game's final play where it was kind of exciting. They got it past midfield on that play, but then they had an illegal forward pass from Justice Hill ended the game.
Yeah, this is the game. This is the game where in 2023, Brandon Stevens had a terrific year and really emerged as what we thought would be a stalwart cornerback for Baltimore. And this was the game in 2024 when we realized that 2023 might have been the mirage. Like, he was getting cooked over and over by Adams. KVN got a sack to he got a sack on the drive that the Raiders ended up tying the game to make it third and 17 from the 17. And then Stevens is called for a pass interference in the end zone on the next play. Obviously, that puts the ball to one. The Raiders go in and score. When the Ravens get the ball back tied, that sack by Crosby was the stunt where he went around where Fa'alele was supposed to be and just blew Lamar up in his face. And I just remember being so frustrated by the way that we were just allowed our weaker links to get exposed and how the Raiders just relied on their best players down the stretch to win that game.
All right, we've got one more game to discuss here, and that's 2025 Week 1 versus the Bills. Most of you know it. We'll refresh ourselves one more time as if we really want that, but we led, the Ravens led 40-25 after the Henry touchdown, Q4 11-42. They were up 15. We were there, and I will just tell you that there were Bills fans saying, I'm not staying for the rest of this crap, you know, and this is a joke. And literally, the stadium is half empty. It's like Seattle in the 2003 game where the Ravens fans had all left, but the stadium was incredibly loud with fewer people in it, largely because the sound reverberates, I think, better off the concrete than it does off people sometimes. But that was a very similar game from the Ravens perspective. Anyway, the three remaining drives they had after that point were punt, fumble, and punt on 8 total plays. They had 12 plays in all of Q4. The Henry touchdown was a lightning bolt from 46 yards, I think, to go up 40-25. But as soon as the Henry touchdown occurred, the Bills drove 72 yards on 10 plays. They had a touchdown with 3:56 to go. In a certain way, you're saying, well, maybe they're running the clock out on themselves. They kicked. They just made it 40-32. So they're still down 8. They've only got, it looks like, one path to win, which is score, get a 2-point conversion, take the game to overtime, win it there. That's a lot of ifs, you know, that the Ravens could potentially survive. But then, of course, that score came on a 4th-and-5 play where Kincaid tipped the ball to Coleman in the end zone, and just a ridiculously unlucky play for the Ravens. You know, they've had some of this occur during this too. It's just some absurd lack of fumble luck, and this tip pass in this game. The tip pass in Week 2 that went for another touchdown from Flacco also, you know, looked like the Browns might get back in the game for a second. There's just some seemingly repeating things that are happening, and you know, they didn't have anything to do with the Ravens players. At least the Bills touchdown didn't. It was his tip by Kincaid to Coleman. I mean, there was no Raven who even touched the ball. So I can't put that on anybody on the Ravens, unfortunately, other than just dumb luck. And then, of course, after the Coleman touchdown, Henry fumbled on the second play from scrimmage. The Bills got the ball back deep in Ravens territory. They drove 30 yards on 4 plays to score, but then they failed the 2-point conversion. They give the Ravens another chance to win this football game.
Yeah.
The Ravens go 3 and out, Flowers jet sweep, the 6-yard pass to Hopkins. And then I think one of the big coaching blunders, and this would have been a big mathematical increase in value, would have been to go for the fourth down on 4th-and-2.5 was a fairly big coaching whiff. Now, at the time, Lamar Jackson was hurt. I think there was still a way to do it. They could have called timeout, sent in rush, tried to draw him off sides. Then called timeout, because you can't call two in a row. Then called timeout, and then see if during that time they could get Lamar right. He said it was cramping. It looked like he took a huge hit from Ed Oliver. It wouldn't surprise me if he got his bell rung on that play or got the wind knocked out of him. It might have been something he could have been okay coming back in, or it might have been something that he wasn't coming back in no matter what in that game. We may never know about that, but the fourth and 2.5, if you have Lamar Jackson, is a huge whiff in terms of the ability to do it. Harbaugh claims that was not the case, but I'm not sure it had to be the case given the ability to call a full timeout at that point. And then, of course, Buffalo, after the punt, drove effortlessly down the field with completions of 32 to Palmer, 25 to Coleman to set up the game-winning field goal as time expired. And I mentioned earlier, very frustrating game where the Bills had a half-ending field goal in both halves.
This one, I don't pin it on Harbaugh as much not going for it. I would have liked to see him go for it, but Lamar said in his post game that he was cramping. He would have pushed to go for it otherwise. And they could have thought faster on their feet, but like the Henry fumble is just, again, like that's the backbreaker play.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned Moore goes 3 and out in their last three drives. Well, the first of those three drives, they score to go up 40 to 25. They kick it to Buffalo. They actually force Buffalo to punt and they get the ball back. And at that point, you're like, okay, this game, like we can milk the clock here. And then they go 3 and out, give up the deflected TD, get the ball back. Henry fumbles, give up the TD, and then they go 3 and out. And again, it's just everything down the stretch that was going right for through three quarters of the game just went wrong. And this is just so frustrating. This one to me is just mostly just bad luck. And the first game of the season when your starters hadn't played at all in the preseason and the defense was just gassed.
So let's talk common threads in these games, because I think that's what we're trying to get at here. One thing I just can't stand is the hyperbole after any loss of this type, where obviously frustrated fans, and let's get a few things here. Fans get frustrated. They want to find fault with something, and they want it to be something that can be transitional, meaning it can be fixed with a simple move that they can suggest. You know, we can't be this conservative. The Harbaugh's got to go. And if you got rid of Harbaugh, everything will correct itself. Absolutely not true, but you know, this is a people are, you know, get with, they're frustrated, they're angry. I'm in on Tuesday morning to do my radio show on 105.7 with the morning crew, and they their radio show, my segments on their show, let me be careful about that. But one of the things that Rob Long said is you've got to give the people an opportunity to vent on a day like this or they'll just turn the station. And he's absolutely right. He couldn't be more right. And they must have, while I was sitting there, both before I went on air and then I hung around for an extra segment. They took some extra calls. Every single call was basically, you know, this sucks. They can't do this again. Harbaugh's got to go. Basically, every caller said the exact same thing in one form, in very slightly different variations on the same exact theme. And, you know, he went through them very judiciously and, you know, and he gives them a certain amount of time to vent. And then he says, hey, we got to move on, kind of thing. It's well done. But, you know, it's basically, we know that basically everybody's frustrated with these losses. You know, I hear you talk about each one at the end of this narration of the play. And I apologize for, you know, kind of hogging the airtime in a show like this. But the truth of the matter is we need to get through it. And, you know, we can't get down into a slog fest about every game about, oh, this sucked. I just remember how I felt and I couldn't meet people for drinks. I mean, we can't go into all these side stories about every game here because it sucked for all of us is the truth of the matter.
Yeah.
But that is one common thread is people are frustrated. It's just one thing. And they want to find that transitional answer. And the single thing I find in all this is there is no one answer. It's a whole bunch of blame to mete out to the various parties involved, defense, offense, special teams, coaching. second chances given away, lots to Lamar, frankly. But you would expect that. I mean, these are the only games the Ravens lose. They're close games. That's the only way the Ravens ever lose a game with Lamar. It's a close game. Every NFL game that's close, very naturally, has one or two or three or sometimes 10 plays where you can say that if just that had gone right, then the Ravens would have won the game.
Yeah. I that was that when I dug in and tried to look at the drive charts to see if the Ravens got conservative. Did they just run it up the middle three times a drive and kick it away only to give up the tying touchdown? Was that consistent over and over? And what I found is just what you said. These results are random. Someone makes a mistake. It might be someone you expect. Like, you know, you might, if there's going to be a turnover on offense, it's most likely it's going to be Lamar involved because he's the quarterback. He's got the ball in his hands. But there's plenty of times when it's not. And, you know, week one in Buffalo, Derrick Henry, who never fumbled. And what are you supposed to do? And honestly, going through this and looking at these in detail, it helped me feel better as like, oh, there's not something that they can't see that they could just fix. You know, on one hand, it would be nice to say, oh, they just need to call play action pass every first down, something that's obviously not going to be the answer. But it's also, you know, it's just a reminder that it's just a reminder that like some things don't always, there doesn't have to be a reason for everything. Sometimes you just get unlucky. Sometimes guys just make bad plays. So the other team makes a better play.
Yeah. You know? And sometimes the other team controls the football better. I mean, I think that's been the case with the two Buffalo losses is they've just done a better job managing the football at the end of each half. And so they'd be that. So some credit has to go to the opposing team.
Yeah.
Is that unbelievable that there's another team out here trying to win a football game from the Baltimore Ravens and they might have a bigger say in how that game ends than the Baltimore Ravens do?
Yeah. Right. And you've been talking in the pods about the Buffalo loss. You've talked a lot about the 0-3 Seattle win. Well, you know, my mind as the counter example goes to the last year's initial Cincinnati game where we had to score a ridiculous Lamar touchdown with the stiff arm over Hubbard and the throw to Likely. Then Joe Burrow had to throw an interception, making a throw, staying aggressive to his best player, and Humphrey gets that ball so much had to go right for Baltimore to win that game. The second Cincinnati game was similar. You know, there was the 2021 Colts game where we had to score, I don't know, like three straight or four straight touchdowns.
Block a field goal, two touchdowns, two 2-point conversions, get it to overtime, score again. Yeah.
Yeah. So the losses are the ones that stick with us, especially when, you know, you see these advanced metrics that the Ravens have, these DVOA teams that are so strong. Well, players just make mistakes in critical moments sometimes. And, you know, we had a concerns podcast. This is my last point I'll make here on this pod and we can wrap. But we had a top concerns podcast, you and I did, on the One Last Thing episode 2 weeks ago. And one of the things I talked about was penalties as it relates to, are they going to have the attention to detail that's going to prevent these little mistakes down the stretch? And, you know, frankly, I don't know how you prevent guys from fumbling in a critical situation. I remember as a Maryland Terrapins basketball fan, you know, toward the end of Gary Williams' career, he had a team that was shooting 60% or something from the free throw line. And he said in an interview, like, you don't think we are trying to get better at this and practicing? Like for some reason, the guys just aren't able to make the free throws. And, you know, I'm sure the coaches are, we talked about in the preseason, the attention to detail on the snap count and the cadence and those kinds of things. Like, they're taking these steps to try and instill that in the players. But at the end of the day, when you're in the critical moment, sometimes they just make mistakes.
Yeah. And I'll say one last thing and then we can call it here is we have already truncated the situation. The Ravens obviously had a ton of two-score leads. If you look at their Pythagorean results for their enormous point differential they've had since the beginning of 2018, which is they lead the NFL in point differential by a wide margin since the beginning of 2018. They should have the most two-score leads. They've also blown too high a percentage of those two-score leads. But that doesn't mean that the overall result hasn't been very good, because it has. They're right on target on their Pythagorean. That's very hard to do when you have an exceptional point differential like the Ravens do. When you get the more extreme you get, the more hard it is to get there. Unfortunately, the Chiefs have been even better. And that's a point that is made. And the Steelers have been way better than their Pythagorean expectation. And people want to point to it as great coaching. I think it's a different stylistic approach to the game that they've only outscored their opponents by something like 40 points over the last 5 years combined. And they ended up with a record that's significantly over 500. But it just is what it is in terms of that Pythagorean component. And trying to find one answer on this, I know everybody wants to do that. I know everybody's frustrating. And boy, would it be nice if all you had to do was cut David Ajabo and all of a sudden it would make your team not ever have to lose one of these games again. There isn't a simple answer. There just is not. And the reason is because you're working from this truncated set of games you already know are losses and games that are all close, because the Ravens have not lost any games with Lamar that haven't been close since that Miami game in 2020 freaking won.
Right.
All such games necessarily are enormously frustrated in terms of there being one play that could have changed it all. And sometimes it's five different plays that could have been the one play that changed it all.
I have nothing more to add. I agree. I agree. And now I'm going to go and add something, but that's why I wanted to do this, is to be able to come to that conclusion and be like, okay, you know what? We're just going to, help me feel better. That's all I'll say. All right.
I don't know if this will help make anybody feel better listening to this on a Monday before a Monday night game where the Ravens are going in injured. But if they can take care of business against the Lions, somehow I think at the end of this stretch, I'd like to see the Ravens at no worse than 3-3. Ideally, they'd be no worse than 3-3 with a win over Kansas City, if I had to really pick it the way it is. But if they were to go 2-2 in these next four games with a win over Kansas City, I'd be pretty happy with that. I think that'll get them to the playoffs, no problem, with good seeding, but not necessarily the top seed. Obviously, in the AFC, they'll be in some trouble in that. But we're going into a Monday night game against the Lions that look like a much better opportunity to win than it does right now with the various injuries the Ravens have.
Yep.
Brad, always a pleasure talking football with you. Where can people hit you up online?
Yeah, I'm on X at MC Bradley.
McBradley. There he is. Other folks out there, thanks for the listens as always. Please tell another friend about this. Like and subscribe if you're on YouTube. And we'd love to hear you back here again next week for one last thing, which will be with Sean Asher at that time. Brad, thanks again for joining me.
Thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.